This is the daily radio ministry of Pastor Sandy Adams of Calvary Chapel Stone Mountain in Atlanta, Georgia. The book of 1 Kings is where Pastor Sandy is teaching from today. And now here's Pastor Sandy in 1 Kings chapters 11 through 13.
This is a great lesson for all leaders, pastors, foremen on the job, office managers, CEOs. If you'll be a servant to the people, they'll go to great lengths to serve you. They'll support you with their service. That's not the answer that Rehoboam wanted to hear. Verse 8. But he rejected the advice which the elders had given him and consulted the young men who had grown up with him, who stood before him. These were Rehoboam's homies. There they were right there. These were his homeboys. These were the guys he had grown up with. His peers, the young men, the foolish men. These guys don't have a lick of wisdom. And they're drunk on power. And he asked them in verse 9. And he said to them, "What advice do you give? How should we answer these people who have spoken to me saying, 'Lighten the yoke which your father put on us'?" And here's their response. Then the young men who had grown up with him spoke to him saying, "Thus you should speak to this people who have spoken to you saying, 'Your father made our yoke heavy, but you make it lighter on us.' Thus you shall say to them, 'My little finger shall be thicker than my father's waist.'" In other words, "I'm more of a man than he ever thought he was. And now, whereas my father put a heavy yoke on you, I will add to your yoke. My father chastised you with whips, but I will chastise you with scourges." Hey, you think the old man was tough on you? You hadn't seen nothing yet. "I'm going to play rougher. I'm going to be tougher." The young guys want Rehoboam to flex his muscle and play rough and show no mercy. Okay, let me just pause. This story is chock full of a couple important lessons for leaders. If you're a leader in any venue, pay attention to this story. Here's one lesson. First of all, more often than not, people are more responsive to love than they are to lashes. They're more inclined to follow the person who feeds them, not beats them. Remember that. And then notice second, be careful whose advice you take. Don't just listen to your peers. Don't just listen to people who will tell you what you want to hear. Listen to the older person who speaks with the voice of wisdom and experience, who's gleaned some experience along the way. Sadly, Rehoboam learns neither of these lessons. Verse 12. So Jeroboam and all the people came to Rehoboam the third day, as the king had directed, saying, "Come back to me the third day." Then the king answered the people roughly and rejected the advice which the elders had given him. And he spoke to them concerning the advice of the young men, saying, "My father made your yoke heavy, but I will add to your yoke. My father chastised you with whips, but I will chastise you with scourges." At least he leaves out the really arrogant line that they had suggested. "My little finger shall be thicker than your father's." That's just, at least he's not claiming he's more of a man than his father. Verse 15. So the king did not listen to the people, for the turn of events was from the Lord, that he might fulfill his word, which the Lord had spoken by Ahijah the Shilonite, to Jeroboam, the son of Nebat. As always, God was behind these scenes. He was working out his will. Civil war was judgment on Solomon's idolatry. The rebel yell is heard in verse 16. Now when all Israel saw that the king did not listen to them, the people answered the king saying, "What share have we in David? We have no inheritance in the son of Jesse. To your tents, O Israel. Now see to your own house, O David." So Israel departed to their tents. They threw the tea in the harbor. It was their statement of revolution. You know, in the American Civil War, the Southerners were the rebels. But it was the opposite in the Hebrew Civil War. The Northerners were the rebels. And the southernmost tribe of Judah was the tribe that stayed faithful to David and to his descendants. David, remember, was from Bethlehem of Judah. His descendants ruled over Judah. The southern kingdom ended up with the name Judah, and their citizens were called Jews. The northern 10 tribes broke away from the kings of David and formed a new nation that they named after the father of the 12 tribes, who was Israel. But Rehoboam reigned over the children of Israel who dwelt in the cities of Judah. Apparently, there were members of the 10 tribes that were still living within the borders of Judah. Rehoboam, he makes a boneheaded mistake in verse 18, as if that was new for him. Then King Rehoboam sent Adoram, who was in charge of the revenue, but all Israel stoned him with stone, died. Now, the issue here is taxes. They want some tax relief. But guess who he sends out to mediate this problem? The head of the IRS. He sends out the head of the IRS to talk some sense into the rebels. Apparently, he didn't understand the extent of the rebellion or really even the issues. I guess you could say they filled out their version of the short form and sent Adoram's dead body back to Rehoboam. Therefore, King Rehoboam mounted his chariot in haste to flee to Jerusalem. He was afraid for his life. We're told in verse 19, so Israel had been in rebellion against the house of David to this day. And this one incident created a permanent rift in the life of God's people. For the next two centuries, the Hebrews will exist as two different nations, Israel in the north and Judah in the south. Verse 20. Now it came to pass when all Israel heard that Jeroboam had come back, they sent for him and called him to the congregation and made him king over all Israel. There was none who followed the house of David, but the tribe of Judah only. And when Rehoboam came to Jerusalem, he assembled all of the house of Judah with the tribe of Benjamin, 180,000 chosen men who were warriors, to fight against the house of Israel, that he might restore the kingdom to Rehoboam, the son of Solomon. Now, when Rehoboam returns home, he readies his army. He's going to march. He's going to put down this coup and reunite the nation. You might have noticed something in these verses. This is where it does get a little confusing. Notice Rehoboam's 180,000 troops are made up from two tribes, Judah and Benjamin. Whereas verse 20 tells us that only one tribe remained loyal to the house of David, and that was the tribe of Judah. So what is the deal with the tiny little tribe of Benjamin? Originally, the borders of Benjamin were just north of Judah. And yet, over the years, the Benjamites spent so much of their time worshiping in Jerusalem and visiting Jerusalem and trading in Jerusalem that they lost much of their tribal identity. And they end up getting assimilated into the tribe of Judah. Sometimes they're distinguished, most of the time they're not. This is also true of the very southernmost tribe of Simeon. Verse 22. But the word of God came to Shemaiah, the man of God, saying, speak to Rehoboam, the son of Solomon, king of Judah, to all the house of Judah and Benjamin, and to the rest of the people, saying, thus says the Lord, you shall not go up nor fight against your brethren, the children of Israel. Let every man return to his house, for this thing is from me. Therefore they obeyed the word of the Lord and turned back according to the word of the Lord. War is averted by a word from the Lord. Shemaiah speaks up, and he says that this breakup is in reality God's will. God is sovereign over all of life, even over negative circumstances. In verse 24, the Lord makes it very clear to Rehoboam, this thing is from me. Notice that. All that had occurred was done to fulfill the punishment that God had pronounced on Solomon's idolatry. And here's the lesson for you and me tonight. If a thing is from God, don't fight it, man. Let it be. When Rehoboam heard that the division in the kingdom was God's will, he turned back. He gave it up. He let it be. Hey, we all experience painful breakups in life. Romantic breakups. Business breakups. Ministry breakups. Remember Paul and Barnabas? Even friendship breakups. And breakups hurt. When there's a division, we break and we ache and we bleed and we hurt and we want to hold on. We want to make it right. We're tempted to fight to keep it together. But when it's of God, it's best to let it go. Fight against the will of God and you end up on the losing end of the battle. Rehoboam, thankfully, was able to let it go. Verse 25. Then Jeroboam built Shechem in the mountains of Ephraim and dwelt there. Shechem was the geographical center of the northern 10 tribes. And it also had a very rich history. One of the reasons he probably made it his capital. In Genesis 12, Abraham worshiped God in Shechem. In chapter 33 of Genesis, Jacob built an altar there. Joseph was buried in Shechem. So it was a perfect location, both geographically and symbolically, for Jeroboam to establish his capital. Also, he went out from there and built Penuel. Verse 26. And Jeroboam said in his heart, "Now the kingdom may return to the house of David. If these people go up to offer sacrifices in the house of the Lord at Jerusalem, then the heart of this people will turn back to their lord, Rehoboam, king of Judah. And they will kill me and go back to Rehoboam, king of Judah." Now remember, the only place a Hebrew could offer a sanctioned sacrifice was on the altar in the temple at Jerusalem. You see, Judaism was a highly centralized religion. The law required all Hebrews to come to the temple 3 times annually. But Jerusalem was not just home to the temple. It was also Rehoboam's capital. And Jeroboam rightly reasoned that under Judaism, his subjects, the 10 northern tribes, they would be visiting Jerusalem every year, 3 times a year. And he worried about the political implications. Would these frequent trips, these pilgrimages, provide an opportunity for his people to reattach themselves to the king of Judah? To keep from losing influence over his people, Jeroboam concocts a plan. Verse 28. Therefore, the king asked advice, made 2 calves of gold. And I don't know where he got his advice from, but he should have fired him. Made 2 calves of gold and said to the people, "It is too much for you to go up to Jerusalem. Here are your gods, O Israel, which brought you up from the land of Egypt." And he set up one in Bethel, and the other he put in Dan. Jeroboam solves the problem by developing his own alternative religion. You would think that of all people, Jeroboam would have guarded against repeating the sin of Solomon. Remember, he rose to power because God judged Solomon. But he doesn't remember the lessons. He too succumbs to idolatry. He sets up idols, one in Bethel at the southern end of the kingdom and the other in Dan at the northern tip of the kingdom. Matter of fact, we have a picture. On our trips to Israel, we go to Tel Dan. This is the site of Jeroboam's altar. You see the metal altar there? That's a replica of Jeroboam's. It gives you the dimensions and the size of Jeroboam's altar. And then where I'm standing, where I took the picture, was actually where the golden calf stood there in Dan. It was one of these sites in Dan, and there was one of these sites in Bethel. And this is where the northern kingdom they worshiped. Now, I'm sure that in Jeroboam's mind, his plan had nothing to do with idolatry. You need to understand that. In his mind, it had nothing to do with idolatry. But the problem was, that's where it led. I believe Jeroboam wanted to worship God. He wanted to worship Jehovah God. But he worshiped God in a manner that God had outlawed. And that's what led to idolatry. Follow with me. Jeroboam did what Aaron did in the wilderness. You remember that story? He made the golden calf. It's interesting. Exodus 32 verse 4 tells us that when Aaron fashioned the calf, notice the wording. He made a proclamation, and this is what he said. "Tomorrow is a feast to the Lord." And notice there the word "Lord" is capitalized, which means in the Hebrew, It's the word Yahweh. You remember in heaven, when John sees into heaven, he sees these cherubim, these living creatures around the throne of God, and they have four faces. And one of those faces is the face of a calf. These were the cherubim that were made in the temple. And if you look at the heads of the temple, they have the four faces of Revelation. The face of the calf, the face of the ox, the face of the man. What was the other face? The eagle or the lion. And so you can see, the face of the calf there. You see the four faces anyway in the picture there. I believe that Aaron's calf in the wilderness and Jeroboam's calves were his attempt to make a replica or representation of the one true God, the God of Jehovah. He said, Daniel, you don't have to go to Jerusalem to worship God. You can just worship God at my altars, the one in Dan, the one in Bethel. Follow me? Jeroboam's golden bovines were not a violation of the first commandment. Here's a way to understand it. You shall have no other gods over me, before me. It was rather a violation of the second commandment. You shall not make for yourself a carved image, any likeness of anything that is in heaven above. You shall not bow down to them to serve them. God forbids the employment of any physical likeness or representations of himself in worship. Now, there's nothing wrong with a crucifix. It's a depiction of Jesus until you begin to use it in prayer and worship. See, there's a fine line between using a tangible object to focus my attention on God and allowing my attention to focus on that tangible object. God knows that this is a fine line, and that's why he forbids the use of any graven image in his worship. Jeroboam did not intend to introduce idolatry into Israel, but that was the net effect of his actions. His golden calves conditioned the people to embrace the blatant idolatry that would later be introduced 60 years later by a king named Ahab. Verse 30 tells us, now this thing became a sin, for the people went to worship before the one as far as Dan. He made shrines on the high places and made priests from every class of people who were not of the sons of Levi. Jeroboam ordained a feast on the 15th day of the 8th month, like the feast that was in Judah, and offered sacrifices on the altar. So he did at Bethel, sacrificing to the calves that he had made. And at Bethel, he installed the priests of the high places which he had made. In other words, King Jeroboam just comes up with his own religion, complete with his own altars, his own priesthood, even his own feast days. It was a cult of convenience. It was a religion that didn't serve God. It served Jeroboam's own interests. You know anybody that worships a religion like that? They might even call it Christianity. But in reality, it's a cult of convenience. So he made offerings on the altar which he had made at Bethel on the 15th day of the 8th month, in the month which he had devised in his own heart. And he ordained a feast for the children of Israel and offered sacrifices on the altar. And guys, understand, seldom does Satan tempt us with no religion. For he knows that we are worshipers at heart, that every person has an innate desire to worship that they truly can't deny. The temptation, though, is to set up a religion that suits my own tastes rather than stays true to God. The enemy waters down the truth to make it more palatable. Supposedly, Jeroboam wanted to worship God. He just didn't want to worship God in the way that God wanted to be worshiped. He worshiped God in a way that was convenient for him, where he didn't have to go to Jerusalem. And sadly, there are Christians today repeating the same mistake. There are plenty of preachers out there that have diluted the doctrines of Christianity, that have watered down the demands of discipleship. You know, the idea is to follow Jesus, but not in the way he wants to be followed, in the way that's convenient for us. Oh my. Let's stay faithful to Jesus even when we have to go out of our way to do so. In chapter 13, the Lord lets Jeroboam know what he thinks of his religion. An unnamed prophet, in fact, he's simply called a man of God, pays Jeroboam a visit. And you know, that's what I want to be, a man of God. Doesn't matter if my name ever gets mentioned, just as long as I'm identified as a man of God, as this fellow was. Verse 1, "And behold, a man of God went from Judah to Bethel by the word of the Lord, and Jeroboam stood by the altar to burn incense." Now, this is a man of God who's got some nerve. Notice here, he approaches the king at the altar in the middle of a worship service. He could have been arrested. He could have been executed. This is like barging into the Oval Office or into the Rose Garden in the middle of an official state function, suddenly just barging in and pronouncing judgment on the president of the United States. This is the nerve this man of God has. "Then he cried out against the altar by the word of the Lord and said, 'O altar, altar, thus says the Lord, behold, a child, Josiah by name, shall be born to the house of David, and on you he shall sacrifice the priests of the high places who burn incense on you, and men's bones shall be burned on you.'" The ultimate desecration. Dead carcasses of the priests lying on the sacred altar. Verse 2 is an absolutely amazing prophecy. A future Judean king, a descendant of David by the name of Josiah, who, by the way, won't be born for another 300 years. The man of God says that Josiah will bring judgment on the religion of Jeroboam. He will defile the altar. He will slaughter the priests that Jeroboam has appointed. And you can flip ahead to 2 Kings chapter 23, verse 15. That's the verse that documents the prophecy's incredible fulfillment. Remember, this was uttered 300 years before it came to pass. But what guts it took for the man of God to walk into the king's own quarters, on his own turf, and utter these words of judgment. This was a man of God with nerves of steel. And along with the prophecy comes a sign. "And he gave a sign the same day, saying, 'This is the sign which the Lord has spoken. Surely the altar shall split apart, and the ashes on it shall be poured out.' So it came to pass, when King Jeroboam heard the saying of the man of God, who cried out against the altar in Bethel, that he stretched out his hand from the altar, saying, 'Arrest him!'" Calls for the secret service agents to pounce on this guy. "But then his hand which toward him withered so that he could not pull it back to himself." God strikes him with instant crippling arthritis. The altar also was split apart, and the ashes poured out from the altar according to the sign which the man of God had given by the word of the Lord. Needless to say, this all gets the king's attention. And Jeroboam goes from ordering the man's arrest to pleading for his prayers. Verse 6. "Then the king answered and said to the man of God, 'Please entreat the favor of the Lord your God and pray for me, that my hand may be restored to me.' So the man of God entreated the Lord, and the king's hand was restored to him and became as before. And then the king said to the man of God, 'Come home with me and refresh yourself, and I will give you a reward.'" A few minutes earlier, he wanted to kill him. Now he's inviting him home for dinner, wants to give him a reward. You know, the king is trying to appease the man of God. But the man of God said to the king, "If you were to give me half your house, I would not go in with you, nor would I eat bread nor drink water in this place."
The book of 1 Kings reveals the trials and triumphs of rulers over the nation of Israel. From the end of King David's reign through all that of his successors, we learn that those who followed God succeeded, and those who turned from him found only strife. This pattern isn't unique to the people of Israel. It holds true for us today. We hope you've been encouraged by all that you've heard today on Sandy Adams Radio, and that it's opened your eyes to the need for a relationship with God. If you'd like to learn more about this program, visit our website at sandyadams.org. There, you'll be able to listen to additional teachings by Pastor Sandy, as well as download our mobile app to take these messages with you on the go. Pastor Sandy has also authored some books that are great resources for your journey of faith. These are available for purchase at our website. Just click on Shop. If you're in the Atlanta area, we'd love to meet you in person. We meet weekly at Calvary Chapel Stone Mountain on Sundays at 9:30 and 11:15 a.m. or come by Wednesdays at 6:15 p.m. for a time of fellowship and in-depth Bible study. Find out more at sandyadams.org or give us a call at 770-736-2828. That's all we have time for today. Tune in for more from Pastor Sandy's verse-by-verse, chapter-by-chapter study through the book of 1 Kings, right here on Sandy Adams Radio.